12. The woman stood in the kitchen door, holding the child, until Goodwin emerged from the house. The lobes of his nostrils were quite white against his brown face, and she said, "God, are you drunk too?" He came along the porch. "She's not here," the woman said. "You can't find her." He brushed past her, trailing a reek of whiskey. She turned, watching him. He looked swiftly about the kitchen. Then he turned and looked at her standing in the door, blocking it. "You won't find her," she said. "She's gone." He came toward her, lifting his hand. "Don't put your hand on me," she said. He gripped her arm slowly. His eyes were a little bloodshot. The lobes of his nostrils looked like wax. "Take your hand off me," she said. "Take it off." Slowly he drew her out of the door. She began to curse him. "Do you think you can? Do you think I'll let you? Or any other little slut?" Motionless, facing one another like the first position of a dance, they stood in a mounting, terrific, muscular hiatus. With scarce any movement at all, he flung her aside in a complete revolution that fetched her up against the table, her arm flung back for balance, her body bent and her hand fumbling behind her among the soiled dishes, watching him across the inert body of the child. He walked toward her. "Stand back," she said, lifting her hand slightly, bringing the butcher knife into view. "Stand back." He came steadily toward her. Then she struck at him with the knife. He caught her wrist. She began to struggle. He plucked the child from her and laid it on the table and caught her other hand as it flicked at his face, and holding both wrists in one hand, he slapped her. It made a dry, flat sound. He slapped her again, first on one cheek, then the other, rocking her head from side to side. "That's what I do to 'em," he said, slapping her. "See?" He released her. She stumbled backward against the table and caught up the child, and half crouched between the table and the wall, watching him as he turned and left the room. She knelt in the corner holding the child. It had not stirred. She laid her palm first on one cheek, then on the other. She rose and laid the child in the box, and took a sunbonnet from a nail and put it on. From another nail she took a coat trimmed with what had once been white fur and took up the child and left the room. Tommy was standing in the barn beside the crib, looking toward the house. The old man sat on the front porch in the sun. She went down the steps and followed the path to the road and went on without looking back. When she came to the tree in the wrecked car, she turned from the road into a path. After 100 yards or so, she reached the spring and sat down beside it, the child on her lap and the hem of her skirt turned back over its sleeping face. Popeye came out of the bushes, walking gingerly in his muddy shoes, and stood looking down at her across the spring. His hand flicked to his coat, and he fretted and twisted a cigarette and put it into his mouth and snapped a match with his thumb.
"Jesus Christ," he said. "I told him about letting them sit around all night, swilling that goddamn stuff. There ought to be law."
He looked away in the direction in which the house lay. Then he looked at the woman at the top of her sunbonnet.
"Goofy house," he said. "That's what it is. It's not 4 days ago I find a bastard squatting here asking me if I read books. Like he would jump me with a book or something. Take me for a ride with the telephone directory."
Again he looked off toward the house, jerking his neck forth as if his collar were too tight. He looked down at the top of the sunbonnet.
"I'm going to town, see?" he said. "I'm clearing out. I've got enough of this."
She did not look up. She adjusted the hem of the skirt above the child's face. Popeye went on with light, finicking sounds in the underbrush. Then they ceased. Somewhere in the swamp, a bird sang. Before he reached the house, Popeye left the road and followed a wooded slope. When he emerged, he saw Goodwin standing behind a tree in the orchard, looking toward the barn. Popeye stopped at the edge of the wood and looked at Goodwin's back. He put another cigarette into his mouth and thrust his fingers into his vest. He went on across the orchard, walking gingerly. Goodwin heard him and looked over his shoulder. Popeye took a match from his vest, flicked it into flame, and lit the cigarette. Goodwin looked toward the barn again, and Popeye stood at his shoulder, looking toward the barn.
"Who's down there?" he said.
Goodwin said nothing. Popeye jetted smoke from his nostrils.
"I'm clearing out," he said.
Goodwin said nothing, watching the barn.
"I said, I'm getting out of here," Popeye said.
Without turning his head, Goodwin cursed him. Popeye smoked quietly, the cigarette wreathing across his still, soft black gaze. Then he turned and went toward the house. The old man sat in the sun. Popeye did not enter the house. Instead, he went on across the lawn and into the cedars until he was hidden from the house. Then he turned and crossed the garden and the weed-choked lot and entered the barn from the rear. Tommy squatted on his heels beside the crib door, looking toward the house. Popeye looked at him a while, smoking. Then he snapped the cigarette away and entered a stall quietly. Above the manger was a wooden rack for hay, just under an opening in the loft floor. Popeye climbed into the rack and drew himself silently into the loft, his tight coat strained into thin ridges across his narrow shoulders and back.